started. I know I'm speaking, but I'm concerned nobody hears me.
I can hear you.
Yes, we will be starting our meeting now. Oh, there we go. I don't think I've ever used that before. That was kind of fun. All right, I think we're ready to get going, Luke.
Recording in progress.
Well, good evening. The council has just returned from a closed session, and I will ask our city attorney if there is any reportable action.
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. Well, I will call to order the regular session of the city council meeting of the city of Atascadero, and I would ask that you would join me in the pledge to our flag, stand as you are able. Again,
I pledge allegiance.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Darris.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. I'm sorry. It's horrible when you can see yourself in the video because you see hairs flying all over the place. That's not what you want. All right. Well, if you are attending here in person, and many of you are, we welcome you this evening. If you are on YouTube, on Zoom, wherever you happen to be listening, on 1230 or Channel 20, we welcome you this evening. If you are not on Zoom or here in person and you would like to speak to the council during public comment or community forum, I'm going to go ahead and give you that phone number. The phone number you can call is area code 669-900-6833. Once again, that's 669-900-6833. And when you call in, you'll be asked for a meeting ID, and that is 889-2347-9018. One more time, that's 889-2347-9018. And if you go to atascadero.org and you pull up the council agenda, that will be on the very first page. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Also move.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Councilmember Darris. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And we are on to presentations. We have a Distinguished Services Award, and I believe we have a special guest presenting virtually, Chief Haley. Is it okay that I still call him Chief Haley?
You are welcome to call me anything you want, Mayor. I'm happy to be here, and I'm so appreciative of the opportunity. There's my face. It's good to see you all.
Likewise. So I understand you have a Distinguished Service Awards for Corporal Christopher Hall, Corporal Craig Martino, and Corporal Renee Vasquez, and Officer Zachary Yeaman Sanchez.
Yes, we do, and it's truly an honor to be able to participate with you all in this. I've been granted the opportunity by the acting chief, and so I truly appreciate his willingness to allow me to do this. I can't see what everybody's doing right now, so if I'm supposed to shut up right now, let me know. But otherwise, I'll be happy to get us started.
You're doing just fine. We've got everybody front and center, looking very dapper. You are good to go.
I'm going to start by just reading a little bit about the award that is going to be presented tonight. This is from the policy manual for the Atascadero Police Department. And this particular award is awarded to any member of the Atascadero Police Department who acts in a manner that is above and beyond the duty required. And then it's also indicated in the description of the award that it's presented to a member who performs a dangerous and distinguished act that conspicuously exceeds the normal expected performance. And I think as you hear the description from this incident, you will agree with me that these individuals are certainly highly deserving of this honor. And I will also say that it is long overdue. This night gives me the opportunity in my mind to correct a wrong. Our personnel should have been recognized for their performance several years ago. And I'm happy to be a part of the process of recognizing that that was an oversight, asking their forgiveness, telling them how much I love them, and then correcting the wrong by the presentation. So the presentation that I'll be doing really comes from the writing of Sergeant Kelly Netz. It's part of her leadership that moved this forward, and this is her words, and I'm just being privileged and honored to read them tonight. This was an incident that occurred back in June of 2022, and so you'll notice the dates, 2020, and so you'll notice some of the dates seem a little off. And so if you understand that this has been overdue, you'll understand why. On 6/10 of 2020, at about 3:10 in the morning, the Paso Robles Police Department sent our department a request for any allied agency assistance. They discovered that a male suspect was in their community armed with a handgun. He was not only brandishing it at their fixed surveillance cameras out in front of their public safety center, but had also fired off rounds in the area, clearly demonstrating that he was a serious threat to the safety of the individuals inside. At that time, we had several officers on duty. The first that were directed to respond was Corporal Vasquez. I couldn't have asked for someone better to be on scene, quite frankly. His leadership is demonstrable within our department, has been for many years. He responded with Officers Martinow and then later Zachary. Officer Yeman Sanchez also responded. And I can't speak highly enough about the two of them. They are and remain two of the most highly professional police officers that I have ever had the opportunity of working with. And I could not have asked for two better people to have responded. They, along with members of the California Highway Patrol, San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department, all responded to assist the Paso Robles Police Department. They arrived just prior to 03:30 hours in the morning. Officer Martinow and Corporal Vasquez both advised that the suspect was actively firing his gun when they arrived. He was moving throughout the downtown area of Paso Robles as he was doing so. When they noticed this, that was when they called for Officer Eamon Sanchez to respond as well. And as they were waiting for that additional help, the suspect continued firing at officers. And as most of you know, at one point in time during this incident, one of those rounds did actually hit one of the responding sheriff's deputies as further indicator of just the high intensity of this incident and the greatest likelihood of harm being done to our responding officers. Suspect fired additional shots, and so based on that, we asked at that time Officer Chris Hall to respond as well. Corporal Hall responded with his canine partner, and again, I couldn't have asked for a more professional or expert officer to have responded at that time. Chris remains one of the people that I tremendously respect at any of the departments I've worked for. When Officer Hall responded, he joined with the other units, and they, under the direction of Corporal Vasquez, all at different points in time proceeded to attempt to locate the suspect, and they worked to try and neutralize the suspect for approximately 30 minutes at various times, each of them coming under fire. When we finally had the area kind of actively secured, it remained an active scene well beyond that time, and officers were finally able to remove themselves from the situation. But at various times over the course of the next 2 days, all four of them continued to remain a part of the process, came back to work, went back to the process of actively looking for the suspect. All of this is done in unfamiliar area, at night, in circumstances where they were under constant threat. Certainly, they had to be fearful, and yet acted courageously and moved ahead despite that fear. It is truly valiant work that they did. Over the course of the next couple of days, I'm going to put that down, and I'm just going to talk to you from the heart a little bit. I had an opportunity to meet with these officers and to debrief the incident long after the suspect had been, the threat from the suspect had been neutralized. And what struck me most in talking with them and hearing their personal stories is their dedication and commitment to doing the job. They were harder on themselves than anyone in the world ever would have been, certainly much harder than I, as their chief at the time, would have been. That demonstrates to me the high level of dedication they have to this profession, high level of dedication they had to serving the people, not only in the community of Atascadero, but in the neighboring community of Paso Robles. I just simply cannot speak highly enough about these individuals. I can't, under any circumstances, have asked for more out of them in their response. And so I'm proud to not only have seen that they were nominated for this award, but I'm also proud to be a part of the presentation. And I think with that, I might turn it over to the chief and let him kind of go from there if he has more than he can add.
Let's get you a microphone. Do we have a free one? Oh, perfect.
I've worked with each one of these professional officers. I actually hired two of them while I was a commander. And to hear this from Gerald, that we have been hiring the right people. These are true professionals. Everybody that's in this gallery today should be proud to know that these folks are on the street keeping us safe. Zach is now working for the Sheriff's Department, and Renee is now working for the District Attorney's Office, but trust me, they're helping us out here as well. Based on that, we have certificates, and we also have Distinguished Service Award medals for them. This doesn't happen very often, and it certainly doesn't happen often when we award it to four separate individuals. So congratulations on your achievement, and thank you for your service.
Hello.
This is a time that you can come up with your, after we get the city council up here for a photo, you can come up with your family if you want and get a picture with your all-star recipients. Try and get Gerald in the background.
Thank you, Chief Allen. I appreciate that.
And for those of you who don't know, this is Deputy Yim Sanchez and DA Investigator Renee Vasquez, newly crowned Corporal Craig Martinow, and Corporal Christopher Hall.
Well, it is certainly not every day that we get to do something like that to honor officers that have given so much and who are so dedicated. And Gerald, thank you so much for being here. We miss you.
Oh, I miss you all terribly. I love you all. And just thank you again for letting me be a part. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm sure you had a part of making it happen. So thank you very much.
Well, and I didn't once say that we're hiring here in Kerrville, Texas, so.
Nobody heard that.
There you go. Thank you again.
Good night, Gerald.
Good night.
And what all of you can't see, if you're watching on Zoom or on Channel 20 or listening, is all of their colleagues and so many people and family here to celebrate with them. So it's really a beautiful sight. All right, we are going to move on to our consent calendar. Our consent calendar contains items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff and can be voted in one motion unless there's a member of the public or member of staff wishing to, or council, I should say, wishing to pull an item. So with that, I'll look to my council members and see if there's anyone wishing to pull an item. All right, seeing none, I will look for a motion.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And we are on to updates from our city manager, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. On behalf of the staff, I want to congratulate our brave officers. We're very proud of you. You represent the best of who we are, and I'm very grateful for your service. Those are the best nights when we get to recognize our wonderful people. You know, it's so great. If that didn't make you happy, and last week didn't make you happy, I don't know what to tell you. This town is abuzz with events and things to do. Last week, we enjoyed National Night Out. What an evening. We had fantastic attendance at this annual community building event that promotes the relationship between neighbors, law enforcement, the city, and community groups. We had hot dogs, ice cream, bounce houses, fun games. There's some pictures up behind you. I want to give a special shout out to Sergeant John Taylor and Community Services Officer Lauren Ashley Perfee for coordinating the event. It was our best attendance. And I'd actually heard in some communities that this event has waned a little bit, but not in ours. And so it's really neat to see our community coming out to interact with law enforcement and public safety and fire and everyone else. The first Friday of August was also a success. We had Soundhouse on the steps, and it was our best attendance. So that was terrific. And so it was great to see that first Friday take off. And Saturday we had a summer concert series with Unfinished with the Beatles and a movie at Colony in the Park Hotel Transylvania, Transformania. So we want to continue to promote that the movies are at Colony Park, not in the Sutton Garden. So that's important that people know that. And we move that there. I think it's starting to catch, but it's important for the community to hear that. Now, if that wasn't a fun enough weekend for you, wait for this weekend. We're going to be tired. On Saturday from 10 to 3, we have Wild About Arts at the Charles Paddock Zoo. And this is one of those fun evenings where you can actually see our animal residents create their own unique art masterpieces. Look at that picture of the red panda that the red panda painted. I mean, wow. He is really something there, huh? I tell you, I couldn't paint that picture. But hey, from 10 to 3, come on down to the zoo and see our animals paint some amazing art. And you get to paint art, too, and enjoy some crafts. Bring your family. We'll have talented artists showcasing their own talents and painting artwork for sale. So this is included with general admission. It's a special day to be at our zoo. Just another reminder of how our zoo really contributes to our community's quality of life. Following that, you can head to the park, the concert in the park at the Tasker Lake Park Bandstand. We have Painted Red. This is a five-musician band doing classic rock. So Eagles, Neil Young, America, Johnny Cash, some great tunes at 6:30. And then we have Movies in the Park, so you can go from the zoo, buy your painting, grab a meal, go to the concert, and then watch Lyle Lyle Crocodile at the Colony Park Community Center, 8 to 8:15. Actually, it's at the Colony Park, not the Community Center. All of these events are free to the public. But then if there wasn't something in those three events for you, I'll throw a fourth event at you. We have the Terry Banish, you must really be tired of there. We have the 5th Annual Cider Festival back after a three-year break at the Pavilion. It's been a long time since the pandemic. This is August 12th from 5 to 8 at the Pavilion on the Lake. So there'll be cider education, tasting with the Central Coast Cider Association, lots of ciders, cider makers. VIP entry begins at 4 p.m. with special pours, so you may definitely want to consider that. So we have a very full weekend, and then we move right into Cruisin' Weekend happening next weekend, August 18th, 30th Annual Hot El Camino Cruise Night. You do want to make your reservations at the Colony Park Community Center now. Don't delay. We have capped this at 500 cars. Those old cars need some breathing room and room to run so they don't overheat, so we're trying to manage that so all of our cruisers can have a great time. On the 19th, on Saturday, we'll have the 32nd Annual Mid-State Cruisers Car Show and the 7th Annual Dancing in the Streets. Dancing we will be doing. It starts at 5 p.m. We have five bands downtown to really enjoy and dance the night away. So great things. You can always go to visit atascadero.com/events. A couple items more on the serious note of updates from the city. I want to talk a bit about our continued efforts to address homelessness in the city. I know this is a very important topic to the council and to our community. We hear about it a lot. And so over the past several weeks, we've been making significant effort in addressing the homeless camps in the Central Business District. The City of Atascadero Police Department and Caltrans, along with CHP, have been working together to clean up and remove the encampments on both off-ramps of Highway 101 and Morrow Road. This takes patience and persistence, and I've talked to a number of our residents about why can't you deal with that. There are a number of rules, a number of regulations on Caltrans property, a lot of agencies to coordinate with. When the camps appeared, I want to assure the council, we immediately began responding and initiating the cleanup process, and we will continue to do that with every camp we see in the commercial district or near a residential neighborhood, and so we want to continue to be persistent. I really appreciate our police department and a behavioral health specialist worked along with the psychological technician, so we actually are trying to offer services while we're doing this to outreach to people at the site. They have been successful. Recently, we had two unhoused residents in the encampment being placed into a shelter that wanted to do that. So that's some of the silver lining of this as we outreach. But it's our goal to continue to reach out to others in the camps, to continue to try and move them towards services, and to continue to try and clean up our community. To that end, as we look at continuing to try and clean up the commercial areas and our residential areas, and I want to, again, assure patience and persistence, we have our first draft of a camping ordinance. This is something the council wanted to see. That'll be coming to you in September. And a camping ordinance is an important tool for us to continue lawfully to address camps. And this ordinance largely will address the time that people can sleep in the evening on public property, the place where they can sleep or not sleep, like public parks. Parks are closed in the evenings. And the manner by which they what they can have. And so this ordinance will give us a tool to continue to remove and reduce camps. And I think it's a great tool that keeps with the law. So that'll be coming to you in September. So again, I want to assure the community that the City Council is very focused on this issue and has been directing staff to be assertive in our efforts, always reminding that we also have an eye on a long-term solution as well, finding services and a place for our unhoused to live. Finally, I want to share that in January 21, the city of Atascadero was blazing the trail in public safety, introducing a new emergency evacuation program known as Atascadero Know Your Zone through a company called Zone Haven. The program, now called Genesis, helps residents and businesses be better prepared for the next evacuation, and we want people to be familiar with their zone. They can also do a reverse 911. Now, this is something Chief Bryce and the fire department, the council, your leadership and your visionary work in this set an example that made everyone else jealous. And so we were protecting our community. It's a high priority to the council, public safety. So the county decided to take our program and launch it countywide. So congratulations to the county for also working to ensure safety and coordinating. But my hat's off to our city for being the first to initiate this. Predetermined evacuation zones will first responders and rapidly determining evacuation areas during an emergency and allow the public to identify if they're in an area under an evacuation warning or order. So this is how do you do this? You're able to know your zone wherever you're located in the county by going to prepareslow.org, prepareslow.org, and clicking on Know Your Zone. Or you can still go to our website, atascadero.org, and click Know Your Zone and type in your address and you'll see where you are. So congratulations to our fire and Department of Emergency Services and the council for being trendsetters and coming up with a program that the county has taken over. So that's it. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Trendsetters indeed, starting with Terry Banish and just onward and upward from there. So thank you, Mr. Lewis, and to all of our staff. We have a lot going on in the city on many fronts, and you are all doing a tremendous job just keeping things together and moving forward. So thank you. Any questions for our city manager? I am seeing none, so we will move on to our community forum. Community forum is the portion of our meeting that is reserved for persons who are wishing to speak to the council on an item that is not on our agenda, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we do allow up to 30 minutes for community forum. We ask that when you come to the mic or you're on the phone or on Zoom, we do ask that you state your name for the record, as that helps. And anything brought up tonight does not become a subject of discussion, but we triage where we can and try to take care of things. So with that, we open community forum, and if there's any members of the public wishing to speak, please come forward. If you are on Zoom, go ahead and raise your hand. Do we have anyone on the phone, Luke? Any star 9 folks? No. Okay. All right, I see someone coming forward. And if there's anyone else, please feel free to move in that direction. May I begin? Okay, let me see if we can hear you.
Hello. Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Heather Howell. I'm an Atascadero resident. I've been here for 8 years and previously on the coast for 35. So I'm familiar with our community and our county, and I'm here tonight just to actually invite everyone to an event that I'm going to be presenting tomorrow night at the library, Atascadero Library. I brought a little flyer that didn't get too far, but I was trained to understand a very important piece of federal legislation. It's called the Inflation Reduction Act. And
Ms. Howell, if you face it towards us, with the then everybody can see it who's watching too.
Sorry.
So yeah, perfect.
Like that?
Yes, you got it.
Okay. And we all heard a lot about this last year, about this time. Everybody was arguing, and it was on the news every single day, how much money and so on, how we're going to do this. Well, it was passed bipartisan, with bipartisan support, and the huge amount is $379 billion that is earmarked for our communities, for our infrastructure, to improve the situation we have with climate crisis and the warming climate, to make all of our infrastructure green and sustainable. And there are, you've heard of ways of doing that, you know, solar panels and e-vehicles and all that. Well, the thing I want everybody to know is that these monies don't just stop at the state and the county and the city. And we're here to remind our legislators that they are available in various grants, and the community as well can apply for these. And there are some that are as easy as just going and purchasing your item. You've probably heard of the tax incentives for purchasing an e-vehicle or a hybrid. Well, besides the tax incentives, which are considerable, several thousand dollars. As of January, I want you to know, if you're thinking about adding solar panels to your house or buying an e-vehicle, wait till January, because there are going to be point-of-sale rebates. I don't mean rebates, checks coming in the mail 3 months down the line. You're going to be able to walk in and buy your insulation for the attic or buy your heat pump, and they're going to take the amount up to several thousand dollars. I brought a chart. Anybody wants to talk to me and get information about this? Short presentation. I just wanted you to know the full program is on tomorrow at the library between 6 and 8 p.m. And I brought one little sign with my name and contact information. If you want to take a picture of it, I can hang around for a little while. But thank you for the opportunity to address the council, and congratulations on all the good work I hear is going on.
And I don't typically do this, but seeing that there's nobody else coming to speak, I will just ask briefly, does somebody have to stay that whole 2 hours, or is it kind of come in and get the information
leave? It may not last. We're going to have, of course, question and answer. It's going to be a PowerPoint presentation at the beginning. Also, I'm going to bring handouts, as many as I have been able to collect that are useful. You know, what are the rebates, and what are the, where can you get them, how to get them.
Perfect.
I just
wanted
to mention one thing that our councilwoman Susan Funk told me, that we are currently, Atascadero is benefiting from the IRA by the construction or the refurbishment of two bridges. Is that right, Susan? Two bridges right now in Atascadero are being
That actually was prior to that, but let's, we've gone way over. That was well prior to the Inflation Reduction Act. But, yes, two bridges are being done.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
so anybody who's interested in that information, the library tomorrow from 6 to 8. Thank you, Ms. Howell. Any other members wishing to speak? Okay, if there's anyone else wanting to speak, kind of move in that direction, that gives us a sense of who's here, and we can keep things moving.
Hi, my name's Cynthia Kevorkian. This is the first time I've done this, so bear with me. And
if you could move closer to the mic, you're a little taller.
Okay, there we go.
There we go.
Is that better?
Better,
okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate all the work that you're doing. This is going to come off as a criticism, and I'm sure that you're used to that. I've been reading in the local press about the RV storage facility that someone has passed here in the local government over by the riparian area in the Salinas River. And I'm here to talk about quality of life. One thing that makes this a special place is we have natural habitat around us everywhere. Go to LA and you'll see how lucky we are. We can't put something like that next to that riparian area with all that fresh water and the beaver dams that are there. And I may be mistaken on what you have in mind, but from what I've read, I don't think this is a good idea. That's my first issue. The second issue is, who's going to keep an eye on all that stuff? And someone's going to break in, sleep in those things, trash the area, And it's right down there. I mean, the Salinas River is a dry, you know what, all the way up north, but this area is just beautiful. And we have to preserve it. So I'm really hoping that you reconsider this. There have been two appeals. And I feel very passionate about this because this is for our kids, it's education, and it's a fire preventative. Those dams have been run into now with all-terrain vehicles. People are already going out there and destroying that area, and we have to preserve it. So please rethink your decisions and find another place to put that RV storage area, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kevorkian. Anyone else wishing to speak during community forum? Oh, Mr. Worthley, please come forward. And I do see Mr. Oslin. We'll get to you as soon as we have Mr. Worthley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening. I am James Worthley. I'm the planning director of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. I'm also a resident of Atascadero. And I want to provide your council and listening public with an update on our region's transportation funding and challenges. And we seek feedback from you and the public through our website and survey tools. Now, SLOCOG is your regional transportation planning agency. Mayor Moreno sits on our board. SLOCOG receives state and federal gas tax funds to improve transportation in all cities and communities within SLO County. And in Atascadero, some of the familiar projects include the 41-101 interchange, complete streets projects, safe routes to school projects, park and ride lots, transit, and more. To receive and spend federal and state gas funds, SLOCOG is required to develop a long-range 20-year regional transportation plan. But transportation is funded by the gas tax. And increased conservation along with hybrid and EV technology has led to a decline in revenues from it. Because of this, our plan identifies a $2.3 billion shortfall for our local improvements for safe routes to school, interchanges, highways, downtown, safety, and potholes and maintenance. We can continue to rely on state and federal gas tax, but that means falling further behind. Or we can do what other regions have done. 25 California counties, including Santa Cruz, Monterey, and Santa Barbara, have a dedicated sales tax that's guaranteed to deliver their most needed transportation improvements. Every year, they have an additional $25 million to $50 million each to put toward their most important improvements. And those counties, they use their significant funds to leverage more state funds back to them. We don't have such funds here. We're losing out on tens, if not millions, or hundreds of millions of dollars in grant funding because we can't offer those larger matching funds. A dedicated transportation sales tax for our cities and counties would raise nearly $1 billion. And we could capture another $1 billion back from Sacramento. Every city and community could see their most needed projects delivered faster and cheaper than if we continue to rely on the diminishing gas tax. We want your input. What is most needed? Today I sent each of the council members, as well as your leadership team, a link to a survey. Tell us what is most needed in your view. We want to encourage members of the public to visit our website at localroadsfirst.com to learn more and identify what they feel is most needed. We have a 20-minute presentation, and we're offering it to your clubs, organizations, and committees so that they can get the information and provide input as well. For more information to provide your input into a survey, please visit localroadsfirst.com or contact SLOCOG to schedule a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Worthley. And we see you have Mr. Oslin in the Zoom webinar. If we could bring him on, Luke.
Good evening, Council. Can you hear me?
We can.
Awesome. Thank you for allowing me to speak. A couple things just to be aware of. The traffic light, again, by Sylvester's Burgers and across from La Plaza. I don't know what we can do to fix that, but anytime there's a truck making a delivery, the lights turn red, and it really does slow the flow of traffic into the downtown. Now, I know our former Chief Haley loves that, but I'd like to keep moving and not be sitting there forever. So if there's something we can do to adjust that, that would be fantastic. The other couple things that I would also say is, as busy as everything is and the activities, it's been great. Everybody can enjoy our wonderful town. The two concerns I do have, though, within the downtown is we did move forward on the downtown infrastructure with the roads. and I've been more aware of the semis that do go through our downtown. And I would hope that our planning department would actually look at that, because I am highly concerned that the businesses, when we narrow this down and change the parking, won't have great access for the semis that are in the downtown and flow through the downtown. And I think we need to take another look to make sure that we don't make a large error in that. That does help our businesses a lot. And secondly, I will come out right now and say, please go on to the Slow Cob website if you'd like, but as a resident of the city of Atascadero, I promise you I will be against any tax measure with the county, especially at 1%. We have our tax here in the city, which is helping our roads and our infrastructure, and I don't believe that Slow Cog, when the funds go to the county, that we will see our fair share. Thank you very much and have a good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Is there anyone else wishing to speak? Anyone in chambers? Anyone on the Zoom webinar? Start making a move now. Yes, please come forward. Oh, well, no, if you wanted to speak, you could come later. Got it. Okay, thank you. All right, so we will go ahead and close community forum. And with regards to the traffic lights, is there something going on there where we could?
We can take a look at it. That traffic signal is video detection, so it's not the loops in the ground that are magnetic. Okay. But we'll take a look and see if we can maybe adjust that. But sometimes the delivery trucks are in the middle of the road, I'm guessing, and that center turn lane, and
which is also why we need traffic slowing down, because you know, just can't have people in a hurry over there.
Those delivery trucks probably do slow traffic down a little bit when they're parked there. Yep. During the day, but yeah, I agree.
And I'm also going to assume that we took a good look at semis and other large vehicles going through the downtown infrastructure enhancement.
We sure did. A big part of our concept planning for that project was traffic analysis. It was almost half the cost, so we kind of beat that one to death, I guess. So
I would expect nothing less. All right, thank you. All right. We are going to move on to...
Mayor, yes. I was going to add, in response to the one speaker, the Planning Commission approved that project, and that has been appealed,
oh,
and it will
you.
Be
yes.
heard by the, that appeal yes. will be heard by the council at a subsequent meeting.
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much. That was in my notes, and I believe potentially the end of September is what we're looking at, but that's been appealed, and we will be looking at that. Okay, we are on to our first public hearing, and that is confirming the cost of vegetative growth and or refuse abatement, and that will be our chief, Fire Chief Bryson.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Our public hearing tonight is to confirm the cost of vegetative growth and or refuse abatement or weed abatement. This really is the final step of our weed abatement season, so this comes to Council. And after a resolution is passed, then the costs of the abatement and the administrative fees are placed on the county tax rolls. So this is our final step. Just a little bit of background. In April, Council adopted a resolution, declared weeds a nuisance. We went ahead and inspected all 11,169 parcels throughout the city, and that was done in March. We know we had a very wet year that year, or this last past year. A lot of mowing going on. So 5,655 notices were sent out in April, which was significantly more than we've done in years past. Our deadline was June 1st, as it is every year. And after June 1st, we went out and inspected those properties again. And at that point, we had 105 properties tagged to abate. Here's just a little bit of a history of the number of parcels cut. So this shows that in this weed abatement season, we cut by our city contractor 24, so that was down 15 from 2022. And it's kind of the average over the last 10 years or so, but only 24 were cut. This is a snapshot of the tax rolls that are going to the county, showing that the contractor fees of $19,529 our city administrative fees of $38,826 for a total cost of abatement of $58,355. I usually like to show a few before and after photos just to give you an example of what we're doing. This one appears to be one of our undeveloped lots before and after the abatement process. Here's one next to a residence, right upside a house and an adjoining field. And this would be another street side, looks like west side, undeveloped lot. So before I get to the recommendation, I do have a quick note. We have an update to the agenda packet. When we passed on our information to the county, they did inform us that in book 31, I made a note there, that the third parcel, it was listed as 031-161-033. The APN number was changed to 031-161-055. So quick note for that, that's been updated, and you have the correct copy in front of you. And then just one quick note, I'm usually asked kind of who are those 24 parcels. And just to give you an idea, those 24 that we did cut, seven were owner-occupied, so there were people living there. 10 lived elsewhere within San Luis County, so non-residents, but within the county. And 7 lived outside of SLO County. So just kind of an idea. Sometimes I'm asked if they're residents or non-residents, so just a little bit of background there. And 14 of the 24 were undeveloped, so just open fields. So with that, I think that's the end of my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Chief. Before we go any further, do we have any ex parte? No? Okay. With that, any questions of staff? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up to public comment. Any member of the public wishing to speak on this item in particular, please come forward or raise your hand in the webinar. I'm not seeing anyone, and I'm not seeing anyone on the phone. Is that correct, Luke? Okay, so we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back to council for a motion.
I move council adopt the draft resolution.
I'll second.
And do we have to note those changes?
You can just say with the updated
spreadsheet.
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we are on to our first management report, and this is a public safety facility project owner's representative services contract. And our public works director, Mr. Nick DeBar, will present this item.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. Uh-oh. Getting a little feedback. I'm not... Bear with me here a second.
Waiting for someone to say, gotta love technology. Our city manager missed that one. So this is in the very beginning of COVID, and Councilmember Darris, when we were having these technology issues, he said, gotta love technology, where it started looping. And it probably went on 20, 30, 40 times, just gotta love technology, gotta love it. We,
my very first council meeting.
I love technology. It was fantastic.
It's pretty classic.
Yes. Thought I'd make our director DeBar feel a little better.
It's one of the things that makes me laugh every time, honestly. The item tonight, public safety facility project, owner's representation, representative services. Hopefully, get this to go. A little background on this item. The fire station number one was originally constructed in 1952. It's currently operationally and structurally deficient. There's some issues with the roof, seismic issues with the roof that need to be addressed. It's also a very cramped quarters there, as I'm sure Chief Bryson will tell you. And recently we moved the fire administration out of that building to give some room for the firefighters to work and live in there. And Casey and his staff are over at City Hall now. There have been some minor building improvements completed over the last 25 years. You know, these all have been short-term. The late 1990s, there was some internal improvements, and then more recently, about I believe in 2010, there were some exterior improvements for entry and those things. The police station is actually also a very an older building, built in 1960 originally as a grocery store. The city purchased that building and remodeled it into the current police headquarters in 1990. That police station is, unlike the fire station one, operationally and structurally sufficient. In, I believe it was a fiscal year budget of 16-18, there was, the council actually funded some planning improvements or planning efforts to begin remodeling or rehabilitating fire station number one. This included a space needs analysis, which and concept plans, which is usually the first stage of a building project. You need to know how much space you need for equipment, for staff, offices, whatever it might be, engine bays. And that was prepared by Ellis RRM in 2017 for fire station number one. We've been kind of looking at that and seeing how to move ahead with that project. And then recently, in the last couple of years, the Armory site opened up, and we started looking at that as an option for maybe a joint public safety building or even just a single fire station number one, just due to the proximity and its location in the city. It is a very good location for fire's response from that station, having two stations. Third station would be probably on the north end of town at some point in the future if one was built, but currently that is a very good spot. The station, city is currently talking with the state about, over the last couple of years, about obtaining that site and maybe utilizing it for a joint public safety building or perhaps a standalone fire station one. But if it was a joint public safety building, you know, it would house not only the staff and engines from fire station one, but also the police department and dispatch, and it would be a much better emergency operations center than we have over at the police station right now. Here's a map kind of showing those locations. You can see it's all pretty centrally located in the downtown district. And a couple other things that are an advantage of the Armory site is it is contiguous and shares property lines with the Colony Park and Community Center. And there's some opportunities there as well if the city were to obtain that property. So also a couple years ago, members of different departments, Public Works, Fire, City Manager, and Police started meeting about a joint public safety building or fire station number one rebuild. And we interviewed a lot of different consultants and other representatives from Cal Poly. And, you know, we actually spoke with the architect for this building that was the master architect and a number of others. But it was decided that probably the best approach to any kind of public safety building or fire station number one would be a design build approach. And the city actually issued and request for proposals in May 2023, that's my typo, to solicit owner's representative services for either a joint building or a fire station number one. Some of the scope of that RFP included two phases. The first phase would be a preliminary site needs assessment. You know, very similar to what occurred with RRM in 2017 with fire station number one, would be looking at that again and then also doing one for the police station. It also included site feasibility studies and concept plans. So really looking at you know, these sites and seeing what could be accommodated, how much space we need once we know the space, and, you know, what is the best alternatives to get to. We are hoping by the time we finish this, we kind of know what our options are with sites, if the Armory site is a viable option. It may not be a viable option, and we'll go from there. But phase two would be really getting into the heavy lift of what the proposal or the contract would be, which would be design build owners representative. This would include a lot of program and project management, public relations, outreach, communication with the public. We really want to, you know, have the city of Atascadero residents and businesses really want to be part of this. And this isn't really the fire station's building. This is the community's building. So really bringing everybody along. This is going to be an expensive project. Public safety, any building now is expensive, but public safety buildings are much, much more expensive than others. Also helping out with selecting our design build contractor and putting out that solicitation. And then once we do have that team together, the design and construction phase services. So we actually only received one proposal, but that proposal was highly qualified from Vanner Construction Management, Inc. Vanner. I always say Vanner. Vanner. They are a local, they have a local office, highly experienced. They have a lot of experts in their company that can help out that may not even live here, but, you know, we're lucky that their core team is made up of local individuals that live right here on the Central Coast. They did include a detailed breakdown of labor hours and reimbursables for each cost or each task. And then we actually interviewed them and got to know them, and we feel very comfortable, the selection team, with awarding and moving ahead with Vanner or Vanner. They actually, more recently, their projects that they have done, San Luis Obispo Fire Station Number 1, they've done. They've also, San Luis County Dispatch Facility. And more recently, they were just selected by the city of Pismo Beach for their public safety building. So our city manager, it's probably a little deja vu for him through this process. A little breakdown on the cost that Vanner provided to us. As I mentioned, the each phase we're going to it'll be like a work order type of a contract that will be if the city council awards this project. So each phase or task they'd be, you know, would they'd have to complete on before the next phase, and each one would be dependent on the other. But a little over $750,000. There's also going to be about $350,000 that the city will need to contract separately for topographic surveys, geotechnical reports, permitting, and staff administration. And then once, approach a site, you know, is selected, that would be the owner's construction services would kick in. That's really the lion's share of their cost is going to be really being an extension of our staff, an expert extension of our staff, master architecture and everything else for, you know, working with a contracting and design firm that is selected by the city once we get to that point. There's going to be obviously a lot more of city council consideration before we even get to that point. So, this is a beginning stage, but it's a stage that's super important that we get the right team, because they are going to be, you know, acting on our behalf. They are going to be an extension of our staff. They're really going to be an integral part of our our city and this project. And we want them to be, you know, that owner's rep to be through construction and even after construction and, you know, getting the building, the little nuances figured out on it as well. So a total estimated expenditures there is about $3.25 million. Vanner's contract is for, sorry, a little over, like, it's for about $2.6 million. So that's their complete cost on that. But as I mentioned, phase one through three is about $756,000. So with that, the recommendation tonight is for council to award a professional services agreement with Vanner Construction Management, Inc. for $2,597,084 to provide owners representative services for the Atascadero Public Safety Facility project. And as I mentioned, this could be a joint project. It might be just the fire station one. They're going to really help us out with those costs to really see where we what we can do, what we should be doing. There's a lot of work ahead. This is just really the stage one, getting a partner on board that can provide the expertise in-house to help us through this project. So with that, I can turn it over to you, Mayor Marano, and
thank you,
answer
Director.
Any questions you have.
It's encouraging that we're moving forward with this. This is something that's been a priority for certainly for the fire department, but also for council for several years now. And to have the D20 funding and the ability to be moving forward with this, we're really grateful for that ability. And often when you receive one bid, it's, you know, sometimes you're rejecting that bid. You're having to go out again. So it's also equally encouraging that we have a bid from somebody with such expertise and who's highly respected and has done a good job for others locally. I was wondering if you could, it is in our packet here, but maybe even just letting the public know the benefit to going with it, just and just briefly, but a design build that we're doing here versus the design bid build. It sounds like we'll be saving, you know, time and money down the line, and we'll really streamline things.
Yeah, one of the great things about design build is you'll at some point you have a maximum guaranteed price, and what that does is gives the city assurance that we set our budget. It's not going to be any more than that. The contractor design build team is committed to that. And it's usually, you know, when they get to about somewhere about, you know, 65 to 75% design documents, they can usually kind of drill that down. Now, if we ask for something different, obviously it's
that's
a change
on
order,
us,
but
yes.
That's one of the things, and it also streamlines that process.
Yep.
Vanner's going to be helping us out also with some funding, and we're going to be looking at all sorts of things for that. But
and Director, what is the timeline, this initial part of seeing, okay, what are the needs, and where would those be best suited, and, of course, figuring out what the opportunity is for siting? I think is that in the six-month range?
Yeah, I think it would probably even be less than that. I mean, I think in 6 months we should have that all completed. Hopefully we know about the armory site, and maybe the study says something else about there. We don't know. I mean, this is going to be really, you know, kind of exciting to see what ends up happening and where we go with this.
Yeah.
But
a lot of things to dig
definitely
into.
Definitely within the next 6 months we'll have that
okay.
First phase.
Yes, Mr. Lewis.
Yeah, Mayor, if I may, and having just gone through this process in a former life, design build offers a much greater efficiency between the architect and the contractor and the city. So you have much more flexibility and you have much more determination of what project you actually end up with. Mm-hmm. It significantly reduces change orders because the architect and the contractor are working together designing the process as they go with you as a partner. And so I think it's a more efficient process. It could be quicker. It definitely can be more cost effective. And so I think it's an excellent way to go. As far as our activities, if you go forward tonight, it would be my goal that we have a site selection done by the end of this calendar year. So we actually have a very big meeting set up with the state of California at the end of this month. We have a strategy meeting with staff on that this week. I'm very optimistic at that meeting that we'll have a path forward that we'll know by the end of the year During that time, if we issue this contract, the firm would be helping us narrow what facility we actually are going to get. How big will it be, and what will it cost on a square footage basis, and kind of how it might site. That work will be kind of site agnostic. We're really just kind of looking at the building and space, what we need and how things connect and how they work. Our goal then would be if we had a site located by the end of the year, and now we know how big the building is and how much it costs, we could bring that back to the council and say, so how do you want to scope the project? What are we actually going to build? So then you would do that in early 24, and then working with our partner, we'd do more final design. Something called bridging documents, those are documents where you actually get to more kind of custom tailor exactly what you parameters you might want to really include in the building. So when you do the design competition, you get back what it is you want. So, and I did work with this firm in my former role, very professional, very supportive of staff, and we're very efficient. So I definitely recommend them. Thank you, Mayor.
Good to hear. Thank you. So I'll look to my colleagues and any what questions we might have of staff. Councilmember Darris?
Yeah, I don't really have any questions. I just want to say that in my former life, I've worked for a couple of firms that have used Vanner, and I know that they're very good at what they do. I've never heard a bad thing about them, and I think that's it's an excellent choice. I'm glad that they were the ones that came forward with this. Didn't have to compete with anybody, but it didn't seem like they needed. We would have needed to anyway. So, I mean, they certainly have my vote. So I just wanted to air that. I think they're an excellent choice.
Thank you, Councilmember Darris. And Mayor Pro Tem Funk, I think I saw your hand. Yes.
Yeah, just to say with the design build process that you're happy we're on, does that skew the process in any way for or against local companies?
Could you hear that?
I didn't quite catch that. Could you repeat that?
A little hard to hear you.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Okay, sorry. Does doing the design build process as we're moving ahead with this contract, does that skew the process in any way against or in favor of local companies?
Did you hear the question?
In terms of
the construction.
We got it. So she's wondering if the design build process skews the direction for or against local companies to build.
Not really. I mean, I think local companies are going to have an advantage because they're local and can have the local labor force. But, as far as design build teams, this is going to be a big enough project, especially if it's a, joint police fire complex, that it's going to attract a lot of big firms from metropolitan areas. But, there's very qualified firms right here in Atascadero that can do the job. So I think, they're all going to be, those local firms, I'm sure, will be quite aggressive for the project.
Thank you.
Great. And we have a lot of local labor, too, who are capable of this and skilled trade this kind of work. Does this change any ability to, does this limit our ability to encourage or incentivize local hiring in this process so that the money being invested in this race to cancel work stays in the community?
Yeah, and we're not at that stage yet. We're kind of in this beginning stage. So when it comes to, looking at construction and going out for that process, we can have that conversation. Is there something, Director, you wanted to add?
I think there may be some opportunities to provide incentives when we get to that point, when we solicit that design build team. The city manager might want to add to that.
I was just going to share just high level the process. So we will work with Vanner to issue a request for qualifications, basically saying here one, here all, firms big, small, in the area, out of the area, because the key is to have maximum competition. If you want maximum competition, that reduces the price, and so that's very important. And so we do a request for qualification, and on a facility of this nature, saving $1 million or $2 million is a lot of money. And so firms will respond saying, we're interested, we're interested, we're interested. Staff works with Vanner, goes through a screening process and said, we're going to invite the top three to actually go through the process. Because the process is very intensive. It's not like bidding on a public contract where you say, oh, we'll build your bridge. You put the plans and specs out. There aren't any plans and specs yet in a design build. So you actually say, who is interested, based on their experience, their capacity, their ability, we will select 2 to 4 firms working with Vanner's advice, or like a coach. And then we will invite those 4 firms to actually go through a design competition, where they will actually expend $50,000 to $100,000 on architectural rendering, site plans, very specific cost information, which is proprietary to their firm. We'll look at it. And based on that, what is consistent with the council's policy and what you approved in the bridging documents and the scoring criteria, we would select a firm. So that's kind of how the process works. It's really driven to who is the best project, who understands our community best, who hit the bullseye closest to what the council really wanted for our community and for our station, and then you have that guaranteed maximum price. These are all prevailing wage projects, so there would be trade workers in them, but it's really skilled toward, this whole process is geared towards competition, getting the best, and ensuring an architecture team and a contractor team that work seamlessly together to reduce the cost of the project.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And if I, I'm asking my question. One additional one. We're talking about one of the options in elements in this being the emergency operations center. And I think the fire and PD and dispatch elements are pretty intuitive for most folks. But could you explain or ask one of the chief specialists to explain a little bit about what the emergency operations center piece is and why that is so important?
If you couldn't hear, she was asking, maybe you could explain to the public why the Emergency Operations Center is so important and how that factors in.
Absolutely.
Did I get you right, Mayor Pro Tem?
Does
it?
Yes, and what it is.
What it is.
I might actually turn this one over to Chief Bryson. He's been known as a face of disaster for the city of Atascadero. And so I'll kick it over to you, Chief.
Thank you, Director DeBar. That's a great question. So an emergency operations center basically is a facility designed to withstand any other disaster or any other incident going on within the city and provide a location for the key staff members, department heads, staff who will be assisting and keep the city functioning and running during that disaster. So while there might be an incident commander out in the field managing whatever incident, whatever disaster, emergency, the design of the EOC is a safe location, you know, generator backup, the whole thing, so city staff can keep the city functioning and support that incident that's happening out in the field. So it's a key piece. It needs, like I said, it needs to withstand disasters. It needs to be running 24/7, comfortable with enough location to enough staff in there to keep the city going. So
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up to public comment. Any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please come forward. I see Mr. Oslin in the webinar.
Good evening, Council. Once again, Jeff Oslin. I do want to say that the company that you have before you to choose, I think we're very fortunate. They have an office in San Luis Obispo, and they have one in Fresno. To get a local company to be working with design that understands A, the county, and B, also our city dynamics helps bridge the gap in the architectural design and the feasibility of what we're doing. And this does fit also right in with how we should be spending our D20 funds for emergency services to improve our services for our city residents, as well as taking care of 2 decrepit buildings at the same time. I think it's a fantastic step forward, and I encourage the council to approve the expenditure tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Any other members of the public wishing to speak on this item, raise your hand or come forward. I am seeing no one, so I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring this back to council for discussion or a motion.
Mayor, I will make a motion. I want to comment. I had a chance to ask a lot of questions of the city manager, and I feel particularly confident because of his past experience directly with this firm while he was city manager in Pismo Beach, and with the work the staff's done to review it. It makes me comfortable with going out with this firm. There'll be a lot of questions in the future, of course, as we get closer as things are more defined. But with that, I will make a motion that the council award a professional services agreement with Vanner Construction for approximately $2.6 million as recommended by staff.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Darris. And did you like that number in there, or do you want that number out of there? Is that okay?
I think it should be okay.
That's why I said approximately.
Yeah, that's why you said approximately. All right. We'll go ahead. Our roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right. We are on to number two. Are we doing okay without a break at the moment? Are we seem to be flowing smoothly? So right into C2, our water reclamation facility update and alternatives analysis presentation. And that will also be our public works director, Mr. Nick DeBar. You are on a roll tonight.
That's right.
Now you
Thank
can
you, Mayor Moreno.
Geek out on this.
If there was only some pavement management tonight.
I know.
Yeah.
If only it was pavement management, we'd be good.
Hey, Luke, could you pull up that presentation? Jim, do you have that clicker? Okay. Just a second. We need to get the clicker, too. Luke is a clicker over here. There we go. So tonight, this is another huge staff report and a lot of work behind it, more so than even the previous one. But the wastewater treatment plant is, we've had a number of changes that have occurred with the treatment plant and regulatory requirements, but we've been working on an alternatives analysis for the secondary treatment improvements and looking at kind of long term where we want to go with the treatment plant. Actually, the city hired WSC, they're a local engineering firm that specializes in water wastewater. They did a fantastic report that was included in your staff report or packet, and I'm not going to talk a whole lot right now. I'll answer questions, but I'm going to invite Dylan Wade, who's an engineer with WSC, and he was the principal author of the report. With him also is Josh Reynolds, wave Josh, who also was a big part of the report, but basically, tonight we wanted to give you an update on where we're at with the improvements to the treatment plant. You know, it's going to be a retrofit. We need to do these secondary improvements. And then there's also some other requirements that are going to be following as well. But with that, I guess I will introduce Dylan and let him take it away. And I might actually ask Ryan Hayes, Deputy Director of Public Works, to come up here and he can also, Ryan's been the project manager, and he can assist me in answering any questions that that you might have afterward.
Well, thank you, Nick, for the introduction. I'll go ahead and run through a few slides, give you a little bit of background about the project and some of the drivers of kind of why you need to upgrade your treatment process, and then those constraints that will help us make the decision about how to move forward. So just a brief history, a little bit of background. Your plant was originally constructed in 1980, so you got the best of the 1980s technology, you know, back in the analog days. You treat wastewater from about 5,000 parcels, which is about half of the total of the water company. So about half of the water customers are sewer customers, the other half of the water customers are on septic. And the system is a very low tech. It's a stabilized pond system. Really what that means is you put the wastewater in a giant pond, you put some aerators in it, and you let the biology break down the waste. So it's very low tech. It's actually probably the lowest tech and lowest energy usage plant you could have. Your wastewater discharges are regulated by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, and that'll become very important as we move through the presentation. So here's a little bit more about the plant, kind of an overview of your plant. I got an aerial there, and then I'll go to the next slide. So the wastewater comes into your plant. It goes through some screens. It goes into a little kidney bean-shaped pond right at the front. That's your aeration pond, so you're really hitting the wastewater with a lot of air. And then it flows from there into a facultative pond, into a polishing pond, and then it percolates down into the groundwater basin, basically goes into the underflow of the Salinas River. Something to note is there is some archaeological resources on the site. And then also, it's fairly constrained. So you have the river on one side, you have Chalk Mountain on the other side, you have Atascadero State Hospital on the other side. So there's really nowhere else to put it except for on the existing plant site. You know, everything in the city is kind of pointed to get there. So that makes the decision about where to locate it pretty easy. So what are some of the drivers? Well, since 2001, the city's had their own permit. So you've had your own individual National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES permit, and that are waste discharge order. So you've had your own permit. Well, in 2020, the regional board basically said, we're rescinding the city's individual permit, and we're enrolling you in a new waste discharge requirements, and you along with a bunch of other cities. So about 30 cities in our region were impacted by that new order. It's fairly significant. So that was adopted in 2020. They sent a letter to the city basically requesting that the city enroll. You guys applied, I want to say, in December 21. We wrote the letter back in 21, said we're willing to enroll in that order. And then finally in June of 23, you got your enrollment letter back from the regional board. So what does that mean? The key takeaway there is that you're operating under a whole new regulatory scheme. And that regulatory scheme is way more stringent than what you've historically done. So we'll go ahead and just kind of hit some highlights. This is the part where we geek out on wastewater. So I'm excited about this, even if nobody else is. On the left side of the screen, we have what your current limitations are. And then on the right side, we basically have what your limitations are under this new permitting scheme. And we put arrows on the side and some stars. Basically, a star is a new limit, so it's something that you weren't constrained on before and you now are going to be constrained on. And then an arrow means that your limits went down. So it's going to be harder for you to treat your wastewater than it was in the past. So big picture takeaway, there's really probably a couple things we should talk about. Primary driver there, one would be nitrogen and how they're managing nitrogen. You're moving from a nitrate limit to a total nitrogen limit. That really is going to push on you, to push you away from your pond system. So the ponds are not going to be effective at meeting that total nitrogen limit. And then the other thing that's really significant here is now there's an introduction of all these fairly significant and constraining requirements around salts. So the carbonaceous constituents, total dissolved solids, sodium chloride, and the like. You can see that you're dropping from 1,000 milligrams per liter of total dissolved solids down to 550 in your discharge. That's really significant because salts don't want to come out of water very easily. And so there's only very expensive and energy-intensive processes to meet those discharge limits. So our whole strategy has been around how do we position the city to try to move around those limits or to try to deal with them if they hold tight. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Okay, so what are some of the other drivers? One, the city's growing. Your plant is basically running up against its current capacity. I imagine this winter, Ryan missed a few nights sleep as it was ripping into there, probably faster than you guys have ever seen it. I'm sure he had his fingers crossed. So you're getting right there to the edge of your plant's current capacity. So even if you didn't have this regulatory driver, you guys would have to upgrade anyways. you're at that point now where your plants, it just can't meet the city's current needs. And I think that's really important. Also, you know, we have the whole ADU issue and the change in state law that now is encouraging ADUs. And so that's going to put an upward pressure likely on the city and on your infrastructure in the future. There's a few other things that are driving. So one of the ideas is to convert. You have the LAMP areas, local area management plan areas, that are small lots that have septic systems. Those are prone to polluting the groundwater. They can be problematic. So one of the ideas is that you would convert those into sewered neighborhoods. And then also, your neighbor to the south, Atascadero State Hospital, is facing the same waste discharge requirements that you are. So what that would mean is that they would be responsible for building a very expensive wastewater treatment plant also. Their plant is at the end of its useful life. And so they've expressed the intention, and we would encourage the city to consider having them come aboard as a customer. The benefits for the city could be that they're deferring a huge amount of cost, that you guys could capture a large portion of that to help fund your project, and then also gain a customer into the future to offset your operating costs. So that was a driver. Another driver is really just over time, as conservation occurs, what we've seen is that wastewater strength gets stronger and stronger. So, you know, historically, I'll just use toilets as an example. Toilets used to use 5 gallons per flush, right? Now they're like 1 point something. So it's basically 4 times less water in the wastewater, and it's much more concentrated wastewater. So as part of our process, we looked at what is the flow coming into your facility, what is the loading, which is basically the constituents that need to be treated. And we've estimated and looked at that your loading is increasing, and then your flows are also increasing. So like I said, we're just getting to the end of this plant's life. It just can't keep up anymore. And we show that graphically also. So we've sort of provided an estimate of your historical flows. And just in kind of to put it in real terms, your plant right now can treat about 1.4 MGD, which is 1 million gallons of sewage per day. You can see on that first column, I don't have a laser pointer that works, but let me go back. That first column, you're running right up against it. So you're running right up against your plant's capacity. And in the future, we anticipate that you'll have closer to or over 2 million gallons a day of wastewater coming into that facility. And that'd be an average day. And then we look at maximum months, maximum weeks, higher flow periods for the design of the wastewater facility. But most of the time, we just talk about average annual flow rates. And I'll go ahead and move us forward. So we worked with your city's team, worked really closely. You have an excellent staff. We had a lot of really kind of interesting conversations. We explored a myriad of opportunities and alternatives and really kind of rolled up our sleeves and said, what is the best thing we can do here? We didn't work in a vacuum either, so we really understood that your plant and what you do with your plant, there's some interesting opportunities coming up. And in order to sort of really maximize the benefits that you get, we know that we have to bring the Regional Water Quality Control Board along as a partner. They're your regulatory agency. They're the ones that are going to issue the permits for your new facility. So you need to make sure that they're in lockstep with you. We also see this huge opportunity with the Atascadero State Hospital, so we coordinated with them. And then we felt like we'd be remiss because of the salts issue impacts not only the wastewater customers, but also the customers of Atascadero Mutual Water Company. So I would say, I would guesstimate that probably high 90% of the people in the Atascadero Mutual Water Company service area have water softeners because there's a lot of hardness in their water. So we approached Atascadero Mutual Water Company to say, is there a possibility or can we explore the idea of solving this problem on the water side so that we get a benefit for all of those water customers and could potentially do something about the water softeners, and then that would solve the problem on the wastewater side as well. So we tried to be very creative in our thinking and reached out pretty broadly. We looked at cost estimates and life cycle costs for three secondary treatment alternatives. And then we also had a peer review done by MKN and Associates. So they looked over our shoulder to make sure that our work was on point and on par. What we really are pushing for is, I want you to think about, we have the constituents of nitrogen and the constraint of needing more capacity at your plant. So how do we fix that? Well, we're going to upgrade the secondary treatment process at your plant. So we're thinking about this now in two phases. The first phase is let's solve the capacity issue and let's take care of the nitrogen issue with our secondary treatment upgrades. So in that light, we looked at three ways that we could basically treat the nitrogen and provide additional capacity. An activated sludge plant, that has the benefit it's the lowest cost, but it also gives you kind of the least effluent quality. A membrane bioreactor facility, which has a moderately higher cost, a little bit higher life cycle cost, because it's providing you basically the highest quality effluent. And the benefit of that is that it gives you the most flexibility. If you have to do modifications or expansions in the future, you're positioned as well as you can for the future. And then lastly, we looked at an oxidation ditch, which has the highest initial cost, but a lower life cycle cost, and is in the middle of the road in terms of its treatment outcome. And then we looked at, so that was your secondary process. And then we really took a good hard look, and we really focused our efforts in the study. The salts is a bigger issue. The removal of nitrogen is sort of well known. Any of those three technologies are fairly standard. I can point you to facilities in our county that use each of those technologies. But the salts issue is fairly significant, and it's a really big deal for the city of Atascadero, because the only way that we can really address the salts kind of completely within the city's control and with treatment is through an RO system. So we would basically treat the wastewater, get it very clean, clean enough for reuse, in fact, and then you would take another step beyond that and you would run it through a reverse osmosis membrane to force the salts out of the water. And as you can imagine, that very high level of treatment also entails a high capital cost. It also has a high energy cost. And perhaps most challenging is that it creates a brine stream. You have this stream of concentrated salts that then you have to manage and get rid of. So we all kind of sat around the table and went, we don't want to have to do that, right? So we're going to do everything in our power to position the city not to have to do an RO system and physically remove those salts. So that really drove us to some different ideas. So like I discussed, can we treat the salts on the water side? So can we take the salt out from Atascadero Mutual? Could they treat the water, get the salts out? Now it won't be in the wastewater stream, and it will facilitate the city's meeting its discharge permit. And it has that upside of all of the water customers get better water. If you did that, you would also have to couple that with a ban on self-regenerating water softeners. So, and the city has the authority to do that. There are communities, San Miguel Mutual Water Company, for example, has such a ban in place in our county. So there are other agencies that do that. We looked at, could we blend, so one of the trends that we've seen, and you can see this in my report, I don't have a graphic that shows it tonight, but the importation of Nacimiento water has a lot less hardness because it's a surface water, it's not a groundwater, so it hasn't picked up as much minerals or salts. So we looked at and talked about, could we blend, you know, and bring in more imported water. So could you rely more heavily on surface waters and get off of your groundwater? That's challenging. We also looked at recycled water, which is interesting, and I think potentially very promising for the city, because when you discharge recycled water, it, by nature of the regulations that enable recycled water usage, they've really opened the door on the salts. So if I'm discharging my wastewater kind of right here, I get one set of limitations. If I call it recycled water, I get a better set of limitations in terms of putting that water on the ground. So it, I think that's really promising for the city, is to look further at recycled water. So I kind of have a crude graphic here, just sort of showing conceptually what the issue is. So as a customer, you receive water from Atascadero Mutual Water Company. I'm tempted to ask for a show of hands on who has a water softener here, but I won't do that. But I would say it's probably most of you. Not on salt, good. But I would say most customers have a water softener because the water here is fairly hard. So the water softeners, the primary way that they regenerate is through a chloride addition. So they basically force chloride as a salt ion onto those resins, and they strip off other things. So when they renew themselves, you basically give them a salt water bath, and that's how the RO system gets recharged. So what that does is that adds a lot of salt to the wastewater system. Also, just the natural processes of people using water, so your soaps, your biology, all of those things tend to add salts to water as it goes from water to wastewater. So we're picking up salts. And then what happens is you guys discharge to ponds that are sort of shallow that go right back into the underflow of the river. Those salts work their way downstream, and they wind up right back at Atascadero Mutual's well field. They pick it up again, and the cycle starts over. So we're in this scenario in this sub-basin where we see an increasing trend in terms of the salts, or we can see that the salts that get put in from the wastewater plant wind up in the well field. So we, what we're really encouraging, and I'll just sort of set that aside for a second, is that you guys split your problem into two pieces. The first piece is the capacity, because that's a real constraint. We don't want to wind up in a position where you have limitations on your ability to grow or to adapt as a community, and the nitrogen, that's easy to fix. So that's the secondary treatment plant process. So we've outlined a schedule here for the secondary treatment plant process, which is this fall, basically advertise an RFP for a program manager or design services consultant. So bring some resources on board to help you get started on that. Start the process of designing your secondary treatment alternatives. And then you would begin construction on your improvements of your secondary treatment process. In our report, we're recommending the membrane bioreactor process because we think that positions you the best for your future treatment of salts if you need to do it. And then concurrent with this effort of basically starting the wastewater upgrade project, then we think there's a whole bunch of other things that you would be doing concurrently with that. So concurrent with starting the upgrade on your secondary treatment plant process, we'd start working on the salts issue. And some of the strategies we've outlined here is we'd work with the regional board and the state board to get some grant funding to look at recycled water. We would negotiate with the regional board around salt removal and that requirement because they recognize, too, that it's very expensive and problematic. There are some other ideas we had where some of the communities that we're working with, I'm working on Heritage Ranch's wastewater plant right now, And they have a challenging constituent in copper. So we take an intake credit, and we've negotiated this with the regional board, where they get credit for the amount of copper coming into their system. They're allowed to bump a little bit, and then their discharge basically can have some copper in it higher than the limit because they're saying, hey, it's coming in. We're just passing it through. So that would be one strategy we could potentially consider here is looking at intake credits for salts. And then concurrent with that also, you're collecting data on the design and sort of some background data. With Atascadero State Hospital, you would be negotiating their capital contributions to your project. You would be negotiating the pretreatment requirements because you don't want to just let their wastewater come in. You'll want them to screen it at a minimum. And then you would negotiate sort of the reimbursement cost structure for ongoing costs from them. And then an interesting thing about Atascadero State Hospital being a subdivision of the state is that they really have to take recycled water if you guys can produce it because of the state's policies. So there's an opportunity for you to take them as a wastewater customer and then sell them the water back as a recycled water customer. So it could be a really interesting kind of financial opportunity for the city. With Atascadero our mutual water company, we think there's a fair amount of work there to explore sort of joint solutions. So is there something that we can do on the water side to solve this problem? Concurrent with that, you'd look at sort of self-regenerating water softener bans, cost, benefits, sort of how that program might play out or implement that. You would work, negotiate a water supply solution with Atascadero if it was agreeable, and then you would put that ban into effect to basically try to get the regenerating salts out of the basin. Over lunch one day, I did a quick and dirty back of the napkin analysis and sort of estimate of, okay, if 90% of the people use a water softener and they use a bag a month, I estimate about 3 million pounds of salt a year come from the city of Atascadero into the basin through water softener regeneration. So not immaterial. It's a pretty big chunk of salt. And that don't, you know, I'm not putting my stamp on that one. It was back of the envelope type stuff. But just an order of magnitude to give you some idea that there is a fairly significant salt contribution. And then lastly, you have these local area management plan areas. The reason we're talking about those, and you guys are, your team right now is working on an income survey. I spoke with your regional board representative. They have a pile of grant money available. Ryan, you know the number off the top of your head? That's like $50,000 to $70,000 per connection or something. Oh, $150,000. So you figure out thousands of connections, and that money could add up really quickly. So there's another real financial opportunity there to basically convert those areas, pull them into your system, and use that money to help you pay for your upgrades. It also, it really is a good negotiating tool with the regional board. The regional board really wants to see those septic systems on those smaller lots go away. They're very concerned about that. So it's a negotiating chip that the city has with the regional board to say, we're willing to kind of help solve some of your problems, but you need to help us on the salts issue. So that's what we think would happen in time is, and I'll turn this back to your staff in just a second and stick around for questions if you have them. But you would start out, the permit that the regional board adopted gives you 2 years to come into compliance from June 6th. So June 6th, 2023, in theory, you have to be in compliance with all of their new discharge limitations by June 6th, 2025. Well, they know that everybody can't move that fast. And you guys are not alone in this. So virtually every wastewater purveyor, I can give you the list. There's like 30 of you guys that are in the same boat, are going to be scrambling trying to figure out what do we do with these new discharge limitations. So they built in this two-year time schedule or compliance period into the permit. In the next year, what will happen is the city will write a letter to the regional board, and you'll inform them that you're not going to be able to come into compliance in that two-year period. They'll give you then what's called a time schedule order. So they take a regulatory action, and they'll give you a five-year period to come into compliance. Their practice here is that they'll grant, generally, it's pretty easy to get the first five-year time schedule order. So from where we sit right now, we could really buy you time all the way out to 2030 to come into compliance. But what we propose for the city is you need to move on your first phase and solve your capacity issue. You can't really wait on that. So what we would propose is that you go to the regional board in your letter, you would write to them, and you would say, our plan is to come into compliance on these constituents within the first 5 years, and then we want to study our new facility and the things that we've done, and we're working on all of these things with Atascadero, with Atascadero Mutual Water Company, with Atascadero State Hospital, and so we're going to need additional time. So what we would try to do is we try to position you that your first phase happens quicker, and then you use that second phase and try to get five more years, so 12 years from where we sit today, to figure out the salts issue. And that'll give you the time that you desperately need to develop some strategies for how to manage those salts. So the recommendation tonight, I don't know if you guys want me to turn it back to you, or I'll just stick around for questions if you have any.
Yeah, so recommendation tonight is council receive and file the water reclamation facility at alternatives analysis. Report and provide direction to staff to initiate the design phase for the wastewater treatment plant retrofit and secondary treatment improvements project. And I guess with that, I'm sure Mayor Moreno, you and the City Council might have a lot of questions for Dylan and staff.
I really like how you said the regional board requested us to hop on with a general permit, and then we said we were willing to do so.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting wording.
I was careful there, yes.
You were careful. Of course, we want to comply. So I also realized, too, there's a section here, I think it's page 61, where we talk about the potential for a legal course of action, and we don't mean like a lawsuit or something like that. But if you could explain that, because our understanding, I think from, you know, of course, talking with our city manager and staff over the last, you know, couple of months, is that it seems like we're sitting with a baseline that might be somewhat, you know, unfair, arbitrary, uncertain.
I think all those terms are very fair. So just by way of comparison, if you discharge the water, you have a very narrowly defined groundwater basin in the Atascadero sub-basin. It really is kind of the riparian zone of the Salinas River is how you can think about it. If you pick the water up and just put it on the west side of the city, you get a different discharge limit. So you move from 550 to 750 just by moving out of the Atascadero sub-basin as it's defined. If you go downstream to Paso, you get now to, I think it's 1,000. Versus 550. So the way that the regional board set your targets, they have this basin plan, and in that basin plan they've set water quality objectives. So they said in a perfect world, the water quality in the Atascadero sub-basin would look like this. And that's where that number of 550 comes from. Now the reality is, it's really tricky for you guys, because the water in the groundwater basin, you guys have spots because of geothermal upwelling that's been documented where your groundwater is at over 1,000 parts per million. The water coming into your homes is over your now wastewater discharge limit. So if you ran your hose of clean water kind of out of a Atascadero Mutual system and called that your wastewater discharge, it would violate because it has a higher salt loading. So the regional boards put you guys in an awkward position with a very low. I don't remember all 31 of the basins and sort of everybody's numbers off the top of my head, but I believe that you guys might be the lowest limitation. I think there are others that match you, but I think you're right there in the bottom of it.
And do they seem to recognize, I mean, do they have some level of understanding that this might be a problem?
We had some really... Talk about carefully worded statements. In their responses to us, you know, they told us, well, maybe we just won't enforce that. But that's fine for a time, right? Like, while the current staff person's there and they're your permit writer, you could probably get away with that. But that might be a year, 2 years, or 3 years. And then what happens when the staff person turns over, somebody's new and zealous? Now, all of a sudden, you went from fine to out of compliance overnight. So the wording that they used was, I'll look to Josh or Ryan, they were in the same meeting as I was. They recognize that it's hard, and they've told us they don't really want to push us into RO. But they've also, concurrent with those statements, given you a permit and a letter that says you have to meet these super low discharge limitations, and the only way that you can really physically do that within your own control as the city is through RO. So they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth, and I'm trying to dance that.
And I suppose that's what, if we kind of get back to the bigger thing, and then we'll go to questions. We've asked a lot of questions of staff already, and we realize that tonight we're not here to tell you, oh, this is the tertiary treatment we want you to pursue. We're saying that your path of deal with capacity, the nitrogen, and then, you know, pursue that 5-year time frame extension, and then within that, look at all these tertiary options, and let's figure out what's best, and possibly something with this changes during that time frame.
Yeah, absolutely would work to make that happen.
Yep.
So you would say, hey, we'll convert the lamps if you give us more salts, or we'll, I really think your most promising opportunity is through recycled water. Mm-hmm. That's where I would put my bet, because the legislation is more friendly there. And so, you know, take the water from MASH, treat it, put it back onto Atascadero State Hospital as a recycled water, and now that has a higher salt limit. So there's some really interesting kind of work that we can do. It's beyond the scope of what we did here initially. What we were really trying to get our arms around was, what's the game plan? And you've hit it on the head. Then it's, let's start with what we know we have to do, which is that secondary suite of improvements. And then let's use that kind of goodwill that we'll gain by doing that to buy us the time to work on the trickier salts issue.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes, thank you. I mean, you've made me very curious as to how they can say it's okay to dump a certain kind of water in, you know, one place, but it's not okay to dump it at another place. But I do not want you to answer that question.
Thank you.
Because I always think of this when some people think about running for city council, because they're interested in X, Y, or Z. I say, yeah, but you know, you're going to have to listen to two-hour conversations on wastewater treatment and garbage contracts and all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, I don't want you to get into those questions. I'm curious about the recommendation itself. You know, the recommendation here is that we receive and file the analysis, provide direction to staff. What direction does staff need? Because I don't think you won't need us right now specifying, you know, go talk to the water company, because you're already doing that. Don't, you know, go talk to the board, the Water Quality Control Board, and try to get them to be more reasonable. What is it you actually need from us in terms of guidance tonight, if anything, beyond go forth and work on the design phase?
Sure. No, I think just, you know, getting your buy-in that we're going to move into this next design phase and start figuring all these things out. I mean, you know, it's very similar to the previous item we just talked about with the public safety building. We're just starting on this, you know, journey, if you will. This one might be more difficult and longer, but it's a really vital thing that we need to do. I'm hopeful the water board will be reasonable when they adopted the new general permit effluent limitations. I actually, you know, I guess made public comment at their board meeting, you know, and they promised me that they would be reasonable with us. So,
okay.
And the chairman told me if they weren't to come back and talk to the board.
Right.
So I don't. I mean, we don't want to do that, obviously. Yeah. We want to work with the staff and work things out. So I'm hopeful that they will be reasonable.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Thank you. I think the audience will appreciate that. I will save all my questions for offline. Thank you.
Well, and I think that staff has developed a good relationship with the regional board over the years, particularly when we worked on our LAMP. I think we were the only city out of the seven that did our own LAMP, which is a local area management plan that manages on-site wastewater treatment systems. So we were the only city to do that. It took quite a while to do that, and an investment of staff time and money to get that done. But we thought that was important for our property owners on septic to have that, to protect them from escalating costs, and to, of course, protect the groundwater. So I think in all that we did with that, you really did build a good relationship and trust with them. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we have a lot of confidence in your ability to do these things and, sure, you know, talk with them, talk with the water company, et cetera. So
thank you. And going back to your question, Councilmember Borbeau, you know, what are we asking for you?
He says, please don't. We're good.
Okay.
We're go forth. Yeah, we got it.
Right. We'll come back with a, you know, award for a consultant to help us through this in the next couple months.
Other questions of staff? Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Can you hear me okay? You know, I switched audio to try and be more.
Yes, that's much better, actually.
Interesting. Okay. A couple, you know, as did Councilmember Borbeau, I had a lot of questions. The staff was very helpful with in the background. And I want to comment that this is really an exceptionally well-done consulting report, clarifying some very complicated options. So I want to commend both the consultants and our staff working with them on this work that gives us as a city and the city leaders who are not experts in wastewater treatment a lot of guidance about how to proceed. With regard to the LAMPS option, is the money that might be available to to help bring those areas into the sewer system of such a magnitude that we could get help with the cost of the lift stations that might be required, or the connections to individual homes in these hillside communities.
Yeah, that money that is available is, thank you for the question, Councilmember Funk, is available for any infrastructure that needs to be put in place to allow that sewage to be brought out to the treatment plant. So
it also covers the cost of not just the sewer trunks and the lift stations, but and the services to the homes, to the property line. It actually includes, if I remember, connecting into the house and abandoning the septic system as well. So very lucrative. I mean, it's turnkey for these districts.
Okay. And does the fact that we've got a golf course between the, one of the things that I talked about with staff was we see in some of the details that the water quality, the dissolved solids upstream of our current treatment plant are showing lower than the ones down immediately downstream of it. Does the fact that we've got a golf course in the middle of there make a difference in it to a really large degree or modestly?
I would I don't think anybody's done kind of specific studies to answer that definitively. But my suspicion is that it's not making that big of a difference. So I think you have other things going on that basically as you come into your basin, you're picking up salts. One, Atascadero State Hospital discharges upstream of you. So that's the source of salts. And then your wastewater stream also is higher in salts. So I don't think that the golf course is going to make a huge difference there. What could be interesting with the golf course is you have an interesting kind of almost de facto recycling where they pick up water downstream of your wastewater facility and use it on the golf course. You could Right. formalize that and then take advantage because portions of the golf course are outside of your groundwater basin. So here again, I would kind of push you towards recycled water to think about that because formalizing that could create some opportunities for the city.
Okay, so in other words, we have the chance to take credit for what we're already doing with that recycled water on the golf course.
Yep.
Okay. And I'm keenly interested in this, whether there's some opportunity to get flexibility on the standards that seem to, you know, the basic concept that we have to make it cleaner than is required to, you know, for what goes in our taps is a little much, but I think that we'll do that go for, but that's a better conversation in other venues. I just want to ask about the Nacimiento water. Does the fact that Atascadero Mutual Water Company has the right to take a fair amount more Nasi water than we actually take make a difference in how we think about the opportunity to blend in Nacimiento water into the process?
It's a great question. In our mind, that's something that you need to explore a little further, because I think there is an opportunity there to lean more heavy on Nacimiento water, which has much lower salts in it. So the more that becomes a source of supply, that will help with the salts issue. So I think there's more work to be done there, but it certainly is an interesting or sort of exciting topic that could be explored.
Okay. I'll leave it there for now. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up public comment on this item. Any members of the public wishing to speak, please come forward. And if there's anyone on the webinar that would like to speak, please raise your hand now. I'm not seeing anyone, so I'm going to give it a quick second here. Anyone? Anyone? Last call? All right. We'll close public comment. Nobody wishing to speak on this riveting topic? It really is. Like, you start reading it, you're like, this is really fascinating. So I have to admit, I might have geeked out just a tiny little bit. Not like I'm in public works, but... So I think that we are, again, great job. Just like with the former one, we have a lot of big projects, two very large projects ahead of us, and I think we're really well positioned to move forward. So I would ask if there's no other comments or discussion, if we could have a motion.
I will move that we adopt staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
He kind of raised his hand. The city manager did.
Mr. Luce, did you have?
Are we good? Okay.
Okay. We're good. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Daritz?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, why don't we take a quick break? It's 8 on the dot, and why don't we come back by 8:10? I know the rest of you are here for that next item. We'll get right to it. All right, we are going to come back and finish up our final item, if I could add to their seats, and we'll get moving again. Oops. All right, very good. I think we're live, Luke? Yeah? Okay, good. We are on to our third management report, and that is our waste management contract. And this, yay. Thank all of you for waiting patiently. Glad to see you here. And this will be our Deputy City Manager, Ms. Laura Christensen.
Thank you, Council. If you give me just 1 second, we'll get that loaded. I always like when I get the opportunity to come to City Council and talk trash. Oh, come on, come on, come on.
I like it.
Oh, come on. Okay, we've talked trash a lot the last several years, and this is sort of the culmination of all of that talking, and here we are now to review the Solid Waste Franchise Agreement. Just as a little background, solid waste, recycling, and now organic waste collection is regulated by the state of California, and responsibility for that is shared between state and local governments. The city has flexibility both through state regulation and in our municipal code to enter into exclusive garbage franchise agreements. And our municipal code, we updated that last year to have those very specific requirements by CalRecycle to meet the new SB 1383 regulations when it comes to franchise agreements, and that's a little bit why it's taken us some time to get here today. But we're here, we've worked it out, we've got our ordinance, and our solid waste contract, the one that we're currently under, was approved in 2014, and that's with Atascadero Waste Alternatives, which also goes under the more global waste management, or known now WM, which are the trucks that everyone sees in the city. They have been actually in some form or another our curbside waste collection provider since 1998. So they have been here in the city and working for a long time. They serve well over 8,400 customer or accounts here in the city. And since the contract was approved in 2014, the city, actual city itself, has had to respond to less than 15 complaints that weren't handled directly by Atascadero Waste Alternatives. In the contract, we have several provisions of the contract that are continuing. Those include, I'll just highlight a couple on there. They're all detailed in the staff report, but I'll hit a couple big ones that are important to our customers. One is our residential cleanups. Those used to be a one-day thing in 2020 that sort of, with COVID and all of that, that morphed into really a residential cleanup week. And so the new agreement now recognizes that it's that week that residents can pick up the voucher. Oh, each one is a week. There's a week during spring and a week during fall, and that residents can pick up those vouchers and then take their solid waste, their large items, their solid waste over to directly to the landfill at no cost. We also have vegetation management that we do in the city. We do those for the creek, and then we also do them in culverts and storm drains around the city. Atascadero Waste Alternatives has routinely supported the city. They will continue to support the city in those efforts as well, in providing roll-offs and picking those up and giving us the support that we need to continue those cleanup efforts. The 19-gallon reduced rate carts, that's a big deal. There are several who, with their small vacation homes, or there are people who aren't here regularly, so they don't need a large-scale trash can, so they do have the 19-gallon reduced rate carts. Those are continuing. And then there's the street sweeping in some of our commercial areas and our multifamily areas. That continues as well. And then I know a big one has been the CPI increase that we see annually, and that's at 85% of CPI, and that goes into effect every year on January 1st. Some new provisions of the contract, which are really important to note and will make a big deal, is that we are meeting our SB 1383 requirements now. So there are three container service, all triple, solid waste, recycling, and organics that are offered to customers. There are rates for all of those. Those are being provided to customers to meet the SB 1383 requirements. The exterior trash cans that they service, they will increase service now in our higher traffic areas. They'll increase those services to twice a week during from Memorial Day to Labor Day. And then they also have recognized that we are in the process of doing our downtown infrastructure improvement project. And so they have built some of that capacity in so that we will be able to increase the number that are serviced. They also, with SB 1383, is procurement of organic waste. And so part of the contract does give us some flexibility in meeting those requirements if we need to, whether it be RNG, if that becomes available and accessible here in North County, or if there's a need for bulk compost. I think the other big one is the tree and vegetation clearance in the right-of-ways. That's at no additional cost to the city, and it's a cumulative value of $120,000 for the term of the agreement. That's big. We have a lot of trees in the city, and a lot of those trees go unmaintained by the abutting property owners, and they create, issues with passage on the roadways. And so, Waste Management agreed to help us with some of that. We can do some noticing of those homeowners. We can ask them to, but then when it comes to trash trucks needing to get through and to ensure that's the safe passage of those trash trucks, this is now a way to ensure that those trees are getting trimmed, and then they're safe for our trash trucks, and then safe for our residents and businesses and visitors on the road. So that's really a highlight of some of the new big provisions in the contract. And the solid waste contract, the agreement term is 8 years. Well, 8 years and 4 months, because it'll become effective September 1st. So it'll run through December 31st, 2031. And there is a 24-month city sole extension to, you know, give us time to negotiate or move through whatever process we need to when we're getting to a renewal. And then this is a biggie. Our residential and commercial rates, there is no proposed rate increase with this agreement. So rates outside of a CPI increase that will occur in January, the customer should see no increase to their rates with the approval of this. And then the city receives 10% of the gross revenues collected to recover costs and administer the contract. And with that, I think we ran through it pretty quick. With that, the recommendation is that council adopt the draft resolution authorizing the city manager to execute a contract with USA Waste Alternatives, doing business as the Atascadero Waste Alternatives, the trucks that we see as WM, for the exclusive curbside collection of trash, commingled recyclables, and organic waste within the city limits. I'm happy to answer questions. Ryan Betts with Public Works has helped me throughout this process. He will really be, he's our IWMA representative. He's our IWMA staff representative. He works along with waste management when it comes to our monthly reports. He helps us with our procurement requirements under SB 1383. So he's really the new trash guru. And then also in the audience.
I see what you're doing there.
Yeah, the new trash guru. Also in the audience, we have some of our actual trash haulers here. They are here. And then we have some of our reps from WM if we have any questions or want some answers on that. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. This has been a long time in coming, and you stated, well, this is a very detailed staff report, and with the implementation of SB 1383, that really took a lot of time to work through that and get to this point. So job well done. I know a lot went into this, and I appreciate you very much. With that, I will look to my colleagues for any questions for staff.
I have a question, Mayor. Laura, you noted the kind of probably the key salient point for our residents is that there's no rate increase. So I kind of know the answer to this, but I put this question to you is throughout the county, every jurisdiction has been entering into new agreements with their haulers, mostly because of the compliance requirements with SB 1383. But it's safe to say that most of those jurisdictions experienced a rate increase, substantial rate increase, and some of them very, very substantial rate increases. Is that right?
That is, yes. And I will note that we did go through a rate analysis and increase back in 2019 to address a lot of the recycling, contamination, those types of things that trickled down into SB 1383 that at the time we didn't know what those regulations would look like, but we were already experiencing some of those issues and basically getting ahead of them with AB 1826 and those things. And so we were honestly a step ahead of where some of right. the other jurisdictions were in addressing this and then moving with the rate increases that were necessary to account for some of those issues with recycling.
Right. Sure. So we did have a significant increase in 2019 because of the recyclables, but so did a lot of other jurisdictions as well. I just bring it up because I want to make sure I understand correctly and the public understands that this, to have a no rate increase contract and then with increases at only 85% of the CPI is comparatively speaking a good deal, it seems like.
It is a good deal, and we, you know, even with that, I know I think it begs the question, you know, people think how are we and our rates remain competitive with, you know, our other haulers, both here in North County and in South County.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Thank you. A couple questions, a very thorough report. Is it fair to say that the rates we end up with commercial and residential are roughly competitive, you know, in a similar range with those that we see in the communities around us.
Yes, our rates are competitive.
Okay, I'm glad that they're not increasing. Okay, and is it also fair in the general scheme of things with a context of this kind? It's always tempting to think that, wow, you know, we ought to put it out for bid because competition is good and maybe we'd get a better deal. But is it, if this kind of contract is put out for bid, and you change who you work with, the new company then potentially has to acquire a lot of trash trucks and other, infrastructure investments. And eventually those costs end up being built into the rate structure, limiting the kinds of savings that are, seem to be out there. Is it fair to look at it that way?
It is, yes. And anyone who were to come in would need to have a high level of capital investment to account for not just the trucks, but also part of this agreement that I didn't highlight and I should have is that they maintain a office here in town, right? So that anybody who has questions, wants to pay in person, that's been a big part of ours, is to make sure they continue to have not just a local presence, but actual a local face. And so, you know, they'd have to take care of that, anyone coming in, the trucks, the carts, the bins, all of the infrastructure that WM has now in place, anyone coming in would need to replace all that infrastructure. And that is a large capital investment. And capital investment isn't just going to come without there being a trickle-down cost when you look at rates.
Right. No business can make a substantial capital investment without a commensurate return. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? That was something certainly that some of the public might think about is, you know, why not go out to bid? And so in addition to that, additional capital costs that would be incurred and trickle down, there are a couple of other reasons. The process of going out to bid is very expensive, something where the city would bear the cost of that. Even if you said, okay, anyone bidding, you've got to pay for the consultants and people, there's still the staff time involved. It is a very expensive process. And then how many of you are familiar with the roads in Atascadero? Have you seen our roads? So if you think about a new company coming in and trying to navigate that, and you can kind of imagine the problems that could happen over the first 6 months to a year or so. So it doesn't mean you would never go out to bid, but there is no reason for us to at the moment. We have a good contract in front of us, and I think the things that Mayor Pro Tem Funk brought up and the things I'm talking about make it doubly good for us to stay where we are, renegotiate, and move forward. That said, I haven't yet opened up to public comment, so I could certainly hear something that changes my mind. So let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to open up to public comment. If there's anyone here wishing to speak, if there's anyone on the webinar wishing to speak at public comment, please do so. I'm not seeing anyone in the webinar. If you are in the webinar and want to speak, please raise your hand. You know who I'm talking to. All right, I am seeing no hand raised. Giving it a hot minute because, you know, I know sometimes it can be hard to find the buttons if you're, you know, got kids in the background and you're trying to figure things out, but I'm not seeing the hand raised. So I'm going to go ahead and close public comment and bring that back to council for a motion.
Mayor, I'll be happy to make that motion. I do want to comment, though. About 5 years ago, I was one of two council members, implying clearly on the losing end, of a 3-2 vote. And I was in the position that we should put the garbage contract out to bid. And I think that was the right, you know, thing at the time. My bias is, generally speaking, to do that. But the issues that Mayor Pro Tem Funk raised and that you raised, you know, there's a huge amount of capital investment. You always run the risk when you change operators that, you know, you're going to have 6 months of confusion and complaints. And we don't have confusion and complaints with this hauler, so there's a track record, you know, that argues against change. But primarily, and why I wanted to focus on the rate piece, is I prefer the option of going out to bid because that's kind of in some ways the only way you know you're getting the best deal, if you will. But I know we're getting a good deal on this contract when there's no rate increase, when we've seen rate increases for haulers throughout the county. And I know that in my role on IWMA that others are really struggling with that. So I want to thankful to Liz Gomez and the others in negotiating on the waste management side or the WM side that this is a very reasonable contract, and I can feel very comfortable without going out to bid that this is a good deal for our residents in many ways. And so I'll be happy to make the motion that we adopt the draft resolution and enter into the exclusive contract with Waste Alternatives, Tascadero Waste Alternatives.
I'll second if you're done speaking.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Mayor, if we could also thank the drivers out there who do it. I know they get up very early in the morning. We've kept you here late this evening, past your bedtime. And if you've ever... they take a tour of their facility and hear about how they do what they do. It's great.
They're here past their bedtime.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much. Good night. Okay. Yeah, they were not the only ones past their bedtime, although I bet they're getting up earlier than most of us. Okay, so we are now on to council announcements and committee reports. So for the last several years, I have combined these two things, but they're actually two distinct items, and we have kind of meshed things together a little bit, and so I want to clarify for the public what those things are. So council announcements is where a council member on our own initiative, we may choose to make a brief announcement or a brief report on our own activities. I'm going to maybe ask a door to be closed back there, or oh, there we go. All right, it was Ryan Betts making all that noise. Hey. Yeah. Often you got to wait for that elevator, and that'll take care of the noise. So at council announcements where we, on our own initiative, might make a brief comment or a report about activities that we're doing. And so that might be something like if we go to a conference and we need to report out. So, let's say Councilmember Newsom has been to League of California Cities, and she might report out about that. We've certainly had members report occasional activities of, say, Rotary or Kiwanis. Something else could be where, for example, myself and Mayor Pro Tem Funk back earlier this year went to an Eagle Scout award dinner that the Elks did, and I brought certificates or letters of recognition, and we got to give those and celebrate with them. So those are the kind of things that we might announce under council announcements. Committee reports is where we might sit on a committee in the city, like Finance Committee, or on the countywide level, say Air Pollution Control District, and we would be reporting out something that we think might be important for our colleagues to know. So that's the difference between the two. I combine them just for streamlining. So with that, I will kind of go from my left to my right for council announcements and committee reports.
Okay, and after all that, I don't have a whole lot to report other than to say that.
And don't feel compelled to say something just because there's a council announcement.
No. But I'm recently on the design review committee now, replacing Councilmember Newsom. So my first meeting will be this Thursday. I haven't looked at the packet yet, so I don't know how intense it is, but I just have that one meeting coming up, and that's all I have.
Things are going so well at the IWMA, we are not having our August meeting tomorrow. So that is success defined in my mind. We are still working with the county regarding their stated intent and desire to consider rejoining the IWMA, expect some further. We had a meeting with one of the supervisors, and I think we, an ad hoc committee, had a meeting with one of the supervisors, and then it's kind of back to staff working out some things, and then it ultimately will appear before the Board of Supervisors for their consideration.
Thank you.
That's it.
I have nothing to report at this time.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Yes, HOC Executive Committee will be meeting on August 16th. I'm going to leave the Design Review Committee to Councilmember Darris to chair, as I am, out of town until for another couple of days, few days. And there will be a special meeting of the HOC at the end of the month in August. It's on a Monday morning, which is not a usual time, with the express agenda of being able to evaluate and recommend bids from our proposals from our local agencies for money that is standard ongoing money from HUD. But the requirements were delayed and the response time was so short that it was not possible to work this through a regular full HOC meeting and get it to the Board of Supervisors with essentially 6 or 8 weeks for turnaround time. So special meeting there. And that's all I've got.
Thank you. So under my committee reports, the one that would be pertinent for for our team here is the SLOCOG meeting last Wednesday. So I appreciate staff, both our city manager, I know our public works department, or not public works, but public works as well. Nick, I know you were involved, but particularly Kelly Gleason, Director Dunsmore, working with SLOCOG and with REACH and talking about those numbers. So a few things to know. Number one, the numbers in terms of our future housing numbers, there is a mapping tool, and that will be continually updated. That is the one thing within the HIP that can continue to be updated because it really doesn't take any time or effort, therefore money, staff time to do. So we can be giving those numbers, and I know we have, and that tool will be updated. That said, the list of prioritized projects that we were particularly concerned about, that list was removed, as well as the table that showed a prioritized breakdown by the type and high, medium priority. So that was also removed. And the final motion, I'll read this to you just so you know what this said, but this is something I kind of worked up with staff, proposed to the board, and they accepted. And it was to adopt the Regional Housing and Infrastructure Framework as amended, which was taking out those things, as the foundation for a dynamic strategic planning tool to fulfill the Senate Bill 2 grant requirements. And that passed 11-1. The one dissenter wanted the list of projects in there and wanted everything prioritized and wanted to move forward with all of that. And gratefully, we were able to pass that, like I said, 11-1. So that is my committee report for SLOCOG. Under council announcements, I am going to be doing a certificate of recognition for Colony Days. It is their 50th anniversary, it's really exciting for them. And so I just wanted to let my council members know that. And so if that's something you want to sign on to, please let Laura Christensen, our deputy city manager, city clerk, know that, and you can be included in that. And that is it for my announcements. Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yeah, when you get to individual determination, I have the night.
Okay, so now we're on to individual determination then. So an individual determination is when a council member asks a question for clarification, makes a referral to staff to take action, to have staff place a matter of business on a future agenda, and if something is actually on the agenda as an agendized individual determination, then council may discuss or take action on that. So I don't see anything on there, but apparently something's popped up since the agenda was published.
Yeah, because I didn't have it fully worked out, but I too was recognizing that Colony Days was coming up at the 50th anniversary, had been previous to the mayor's recent announcement, approached by a constituent and asked to craft a letter of recognition. So I had wanted to offer all the fellow council members the opportunity to be part of that letter of recognition and be part of presenting it at the photo club. So my suggestion is that maybe the mayor and I can get together on text, since I do have a text drafted that I've run through approvals, and see if we can't come up with an opportunity. And certainly, all members would be welcome, the council would be welcome to participate in that presentation should they wish to attend the Colony Days Tea, which most of us do.
Okay, so in the future, that would be a council announcement, not an individual determination. And so that's fine. Any council members that want to be a part of that outside of this meeting can let our city clerk know, and we can move forward with something like that. All right.
Okay.
Any other individual determinations that are not currently on this agenda? All right, seeing none, meeting adjourned. Enjoy the last vestiges of summer, folks.
Enjoy wherever you are, Susan.
Go there.